Stinging nettle is a prickly plant. Stiawatli Joseph says that's a sharp reminder of its powerful medicine.
One of my teachers, he would harvest the plant just with his kind of bare hands and then hit his arthritic joints with it.
Stiawat is an ethnobotanist and the founder of her own skincare line. Nettle is one of her favorite plants to work with. It has anti-inflammatory properties. It's rich in iron and trace minerals and vitamins, and it's versatile.
Whenever you're treating yourself with a plant medicine, wherever possible, if you can use it topically and internally, then that practice will just, you know, support your health and healing more. And so nettle can also be taken as a tea. And I think it's such a beautiful plant. It's such a chlorophyll-rich green plant that comes out early in the spring, and it's really versatile for cooking with. And I really love harvesting and just working with that plant.
For Stiawat, creating relationships with plant relatives, like adding nettle to your routine, is a way to move towards a healthier balance without the shame and judgment that can come when we try to eliminate bad habits.
I really like the add-in approach, because it's basically like, do everything how you're doing it, but let's add something in. And from that place, I think then it's really a feeling of, you know, just empowerment.
Tanse Anine Bujou. Hello and welcome. This is Unreserved. I'm Rosanna Dearchild. The wellness industry can be hyper-focused on the individual. New year, new you, am I right? But Indigenous wellness experts are changing the way we think about health and beauty and challenging us to look beyond ourselves.
As Indigenous people, like, wellness was a way of life for us. And when I looked into our modern kind of wellness and fitness industries, I really didn't see a lot of Indigenous representation.
Influencer and coach Kendra Jesse looked to her ancestors to create a holistic wellness journey. Plus, Stiawat Joseph says adding a little Indigenous plant wisdom to your everyday life can make a big difference to your health.
Whether it be going to get a nettle and arnica salve to put on a bruise, or making a cup of tea from stinging nettle.
And Inuk elder Madeline Homoytuk helped create a video game that teaches youth cultural values as a way to good mental health.
This game will really help, I hope, youth in particular, to overcome whatever they are going through and bring joy, because it really brings pride and honor.
Today, Indigenous wellness practices that can balance our lives. Squalwin is the Squamish word for heart. It's also the name Stiawatli Joseph chose for her skincare line. The ethnobotanist from Squamish First Nation unites ancestral traditions and modern beauty rituals with her face creams, serums, lip balms, and even nettle and mint tea. All of which she harvests ethically and sustainably from her people's traditional territory. She says Squalwin represents more than skincare. It's a ceremonial offering of Indigenous plant wisdom that keeps ancestral tradition alive. Stiawat, welcome to Unreserved.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So why did you want to start Squalwin Botanicals?
Yeah, so I had been studying for some years. I was just starting my PhD in the field of ethnobotany, which really is the study of the interrelationship between people and plants. I was really excited to find a field that was centered on what I love, you know, spending time outdoors, spending time with community members and elders, learning about our plant foods and medicines, and just rebuilding those relationships. But the field itself of ethnobotany is very colonial in its underpinnings, and had, you know, at the time that I was going through my master's especially, still very little Indigenous representation and voices in the literature. And so I felt that, you know, taking my PhD was a really wonderful path for me, because my academic career has really connected me more deeply with community and community-based research and, you know, Indigenous plant knowledge. but I really wanted a hands-on and creative way to engage with plants and to celebrate, you know, the joy and strength that I was feeling as I was rebuilding my own relationships with plants. And so Squalowin started really as a way for me to do that, to work creatively, to think about the plant relatives and the gifts that they carry and how that translates into wellness and skincare. And also to create gifts for communities that I was working with in a research capacity. So things like salves and tea blends. And so that's where it all started.
Listeners might not know what that means. It might sound odd to them to say that you have a relationship with plants and, you know, and you're honoring plant knowledge. What does that mean within your nation?
Yeah, so in Squamish Nation, we share a belief that plants are our relatives. And so all non-human life is a relation. And for me, that really has meant thinking about, okay, if I'm in relationship with my plants and their relatives, what does that relationship look like? What does a good relationship look like? And so a lot of the teachings that come from that are the reciprocity, respect, and responsibility. So if I'm going to go out with the intent of harvesting a plant material, then there's practices of taking the time to center my mind and heart to make sure I'm in a good state of mind and heart, to introduce myself to the landscape and also to the plant relative, and to consider how to be respectful, which really translates in that case too to sustainable and ethical harvesting practices. So not taking the first plant that you come across, really making sure that the plant is abundant, making sure you understand the growing patterns of that plant so that you're not, say, removing the whole plant or injuring it. And so that harvest looks different across whether you're harvesting roots or bark or flowers. So I think the depth of that relationship has really become clear to me because as I learn more from both an academic and community-based and entrepreneurial path, it's really guided by my ancestors and elders in my life who shared teachings with me and continue to share those teachings of what it means to be responsible.
Mm. And who taught you to have this good relationship with plants?
When I was a kid, my parents really loved to go and visit elders in different communities, like in my home community of Squamish, up to Leetwat territory. And I grew up on the southern end of Vancouver Island. So we would travel to my grandmother's community of Snoqualmie. And I had an aunt living in Port Alberni. And so we would sort of travel around and just go and sit in the living rooms and kitchen tables with elders. And I noticed the jars of plant material, the devil's club that was put above the windows and doors. And I knew that there was an importance to that. And I knew that when we sat down and shared a cup of tea, or we went outside and picked vegetables and greens for meals we were sharing, that that was really important.
Was there somebody in particular in your family that sort of guided you on this path? I'm wondering about your uncle who and canoe rides with your uncle.
Yes. So my great uncle, Chester Tom, from my Snoqualmie family, he and my great auntie Eva were just two of the most kind, generous people that I've ever known. And we would go and visit with them when I was a child. And I loved going to their property. It was right along the Nanaimo River. And my uncle was a dugout canoe builder. And so we would go out onto the river in his boat. And I just have these, you know how it is with childhood memories, kind of these snippets of memories. But I remember being in the smokehouse, watching him hang the salmon over the rafters. And that was a place where the meals were really important. We would always share a meal. Mm. So I feel like sitting with my great aunt and uncle and sharing those meals that came from their garden and from the salmon from the Nanaimo River, and having medicinal teas often, just sitting at those meal times really was something that I carry that with me to this day. And he was also the person who gave me my name. Mm. And that really, you know, in our Squamish and Snoqualmie family is really a way of blanketing somebody and protecting them and having them, you know, carry that through their life. So that was a real gift. And I would just say, you know, following up on that, it wasn't until later in my life that I learned about my great uncle and great aunt's experiences at residential school. And, you know, I continue to hold in my heart and mind, you know, how warm and generous and kind they were, knowing what they went through, you know, just the horrific time that they went through, and feeling such gratitude at their strength in terms of what they gifted to me in my life. So that's something that, you know, is really at the core of why I do any of the kind of work that I do, is to honor my relatives and ancestors.
Well, thank you for sharing that beautiful memory with me. Do you have a favorite plant that you like to harvest?
I would say one of my favorite plants to harvest is stinging nettle. And this is a plant that gets a bad rap, which I'm okay with, because people will, you know, if you touch it, it stings you.
That's the name.
It is, exactly. And the, I won't pronounce it properly because I'm not a language speaker, but the name in Squamish is tsuktsuk. And the root of that name is to singe. So it really has that bite to it. But it's a reminder of the medicine that that plant carries. One of my teachers, he would harvest the plant just with his kind of bare hands and then hit his arthritic joints with it. And that was a way for him to be treating his arthritis. And then he was somebody who taught me as well, like, whenever you're treating yourself with a plant medicine, wherever possible, if you can use it topically and internally, then that practice will just, you know, support your health and healing more. And so nettle can also be taken as a tea. It's really versatile for cooking with, and I really love harvesting and just working with that plant.
Wow, that is another beautiful memory. Very manly way to heal. Just stick your hands in some stinging nettles.
Real tough. Real I'm tough. Not that tough.
I'm going to just get some ointment instead. Is that okay? Can I do that?
That works.
You mentioned your ancestors several times, and those that came before you, your great uncle, your great aunt, and what they taught you. Why is that important to acknowledge, you know, the ancestors and your relatives in your work for you?
Yeah, it's really important for me because I grew up away from community. Both my parents kept us connected to our Coast Salish heritage in particular. But my mom's family, her mom was from England and her father was from Iraq. So he's Sephardic Jewish ancestry. And so coming from, you know, mixed ancestry and growing up away from home in, you know, the sense that traditional territory is, I think that as I've started to move towards community through my work with plants, it was a pretty, you know, tender and emotional process, because it also meant that I was learning more about that part of who I am, learning about my family members' residential school experiences, learning about what it actually means to target people's practices of health and well-being, you know, including access to foods, medicines, healthy relationships with culturally important foods, and just feeling that heaviness and that grief. But it's also what drives me to move forward and continue to lend my voice and work to address community priorities, to increase Indigenous representation in my field. And I would say that it's really my greater why.
What do you want, you know, others to think about when they're buying products?
One of the most important things you can do is look at your ingredient list. And if that ingredient list is, you know, long, full of, you know, names that you can't pronounce, then it's probably a good idea to even just go to a site like the Environmental Working Group, EWG. They will list the top ingredients that you should avoid, you know, topically and internally. And that's a really great way, I think, to start. With squalwin, you know, we have the transparency about our, you know, the process of our products and really keep the formulations as simple but active as possible. And I think, like, in particular, supporting Indigenous businesses is something that is so important. And, you know, the underrepresentation still of Indigenous businesses is very prominent. So, yeah.
Do you see, foresee a time when we, you know, have this, you know, this big body of Indigenous knowledge about plants, in the coming future?
Yeah, you know, I see it in my community and in communities that I've worked with across BC and into the Yukon, that there is a, you know, a hunger for reconnecting to plant knowledge in particular. And I think really just integrating that through a lens of health and wellness. And it's a powerful, you know, act of resistance to do that, because it was actively taken away and actively, you know, demonized through systems of colonization. And so I feel really positive about that. And I feel really positive about the number of community gardens, community farms, you know, land-based camps that are happening, that at a community level, people are really reconnecting to that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. I grew tomatoes and potatoes for the first time this year.
Nice. Were they delicious?
They were delicious. Tomatoes in particular. Like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that this was a wild tomato and that's what's supposed to taste like.
Amazing.
What advice would you give to someone who wants, you know, start their wellness journey or take another step in their wellness journey?
Yeah, so when I was working with my community, we talked about this and we kind of, people made different decisions about what it is they were going to add in. And so we were doing land-based workshops where we would go an idea plant, harvest from that plant, bring it back to the community hall, and then make something with it. And so one of the things that we made was a nettle infused vinegar. So it's an alternative to a tincture, which is often alcohol based. And so people in the group said they didn't want an alcohol based, you know, medicine. And so we went with a vinegar based one. But having that nettle, which has anti-inflammatory properties, is rich in iron and, you know, trace minerals and vitamins, having that available to just add into your salad dressing, or, you know, even just take in some warm water. And what we were finding was that as people just did a relatively simple act like that, just picking one thing to add in, their overall sense of, you know, their own awareness of health and their wellness grew from that. And there was a feeling of, you know, just empowerment. Do everything how you're doing it, but let's add something in. And from that place, I think then it's really, you know, a personal decision of like, hey, that felt good. I'm going to either add more of that, or I'm going to, you know, learn a new recipe. And to me, that's, you know, a more empowering and kind of self-guided approach, as opposed to the external kind of, you know, often judgment driven pressures, you know, that can come up around making changes all at once.
Right. And you're probably more successful if you just, because then you keep adding and then those other things sort of get forgotten and
yeah,
go away.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for your time and sharing some of your knowledge with me today.
Thank you. It's been great to talk with you.
Stiawatli Joseph is an ethnobotanist and entrepreneur from the Squamish First Nation and the founder of Squalwin Botanics. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Still ahead, if you want a little help getting yourself to the gym, just think of your ancestors.
I think it's just making your workouts and making movement more mindful, more intentional, instead of just focus so much on physical and the way you look and wanting to lose weight or feeling like you have to do it.
Kendra Jesse says she practices the 7 generations fitness circuit so she can be stronger than her excuses. But first, a dance break. Tia Wood first took to TikTok in 2020. She used the app to educate others about her culture and to showcase her powerhouse voice. Her viral vids turned into a record deal, and now the Cree Salish singer can add 2025 Juno nominee to her list of accomplishments. Tia Wood's debut, Pretty Redbird, weaves R&B with braids in Cree. The EP is nominated for Contemporary Indigenous Artist or Group of the Year. This is Tia Wood and Dirt Road. That's Tia Wood from Saddle Cree Nation with Dirt Road. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild. Today, balancing the wellness of mind, body, and spirit using Indigenous knowledge. In Inuktitut, Kagik means a gathering place or a large communal igloo. And Madeline Homoytuk helped build one in the digital world. It's a video game called Virtual Kagik, and its goal is to help young Inuit navigate life's challenges with wisdom from their culture. Madeline is the cultural advisor for the game. Welcome to Unreserved, Madeline.
Thank you very much, Rosanna.
So take us inside the Virtual Kagik. What does it look like?
A Kagik is an igloo. So it's a snow house, and Inuit Kagik was our home. So a Kagik is very much a home. It was a communal place for multiple families. So a Kagik in this game is a central place where you meet and you make decisions. And the quest game that's going to go on is within this Kagik, the igloo house, the snow house.
Mm-hmm. And what is the goal of the game?
The goal of the game is it's a mental health game. So basically, it's to help the youth in particular, dealing with mental health issues or issues that you're dealing with on a daily basis, such as bullying or relationships, breakups of relationships, boredom, substance use, self-acceptance, forgiveness, that type of things. It's a game where you have to make decisions, and each decision has a consequence. Each quest game is dealing with different issues, so and you're trying to conquer that, let's say, boredom, and you have you're out in the water with a team, and you're in a kayak, and you're trying to get a whale. So it takes teamwork to get a whale. So not you just don't deal with yourself. You have to work with others and coming up with consensus decisions.
That sounds very involved. When I was, a kid, I used to read those books, the Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Yeah.
So if you want to go over here, go to page this. If you want to go over there, then you go to page that.
Yeah.
So is it like that? You sort of have to travel through the game?
It is called an adventure. You're trying to reach something. And something is usually on the way, such as an iceberg, and you have to jump to it, or in something's on the way. And in real life, a lot of things do get in our way and try to get us confused in a way. And we have to make the right decisions if we are going to be healthy in a good way towards, living good with the community.
Mm-hmm. And how many quests are there?
There are 7 quests. And within each adventure, there are also mini games. And each mini game is also incorporating Inuit Kawajimajatukangi, which is Inuit knowledge. And in this quest game, you're in a kagik. So you're in a snow house. And the snow house is made of snow blocks. You click to a snow block, and there's elders that are from other regions, different regions, that speak in our language, Inuktitut. And they're giving advice or wisdom on Inuit knowledge, on survival or family well-being and community wellness, that type of thing. So it's using their image and their words. And it's just calming just to listen to them.
Wow, that's amazing. So you're using real elders from different areas in the north?
Yes.
To dispense advice?
Yes, and they're just a few seconds to a couple minutes each advice or each story.
Why was it important to include the elders in the game?
In the Inuit society, in the Inuit culture, one of the ways to survive, because you were always in a little camp within your family, which could be composed of, just 4 to 6 people or up to 20. So not too many people, not like what we have here. So those elders always advise, about the hunting, about certain locations of the season where you can go hunt or fish or go berry picking, harvest, whatever it might be, or get the heather that's going to be your bedding and all that for the winter usage. So those kind of things are also included in each of these quests, actually, and in the elders block. Elders block. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you got involved in this project, you were the community wellness coordinator in your community. What kinds of things were, the youth in particular dealing with in terms of, their mental health needs?
More of what substance abuse is and the effects of it. Definitely suicide also. It does happen and it still happens. And how we deal with that or how we don't talk about it. And definitely now it's more drugs other than hash or weed. It's stronger drugs that we really didn't know about in the 90s, 2000, but now it's in our community, so we should know about them. Mental health, schizophrenia, that has been on the rise for a few years within Nunavut. So those are the kind of issues, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot to deal with, particularly if you're a young person.
Mm-hmm.
What made you think that a game could be part of a response to these mental health needs in your community?
I was working at the government of Nunavut a few years ago and economic development. And internet was just coming around. And we went over to Rankin Inlet and Finnick Company from Yellowknife opened up a broadband office. So broadband, allowed us to go on the internet on a dial up phone. So I was right there when internet first got up here, and I said, right then and there, Wouldn't it be awesome if we have a game like Inuit game that takes Inuit concept, Inuit culture, even Inuit way of life, let's say going on a canoe or going on a dog sled. You're driving around a community because this is part of the game. That's all in this game. You're going on a narwhal hunt. You're overcoming icebergs, that type of thing. So I knew when internet got in, I said, somehow Inuit culture or Inuit knowledge should become a game. So this kind of goes back to way back then. And today, unfortunately, our youth and even us, I mean, everyone in the world basically has a phone. And you know, I play, what do you call it, Candy Crush. And my other people play a lot of games, like, I don't know, real games that where you're doing stuff. So I said, I hope to be part of a team one day that develops such a thing. And here I am with Prince York University and with Youth of Nunavut. Yes.
Amazing. You must have been really excited when they invited you to help develop InnoVirtual Kajik. How did that happen? How were you invited to take part in this?
Yes, that came around with Ice Parks, which is through Pingwak, and we wear many hats, which is, they do these technical things on the phone and whatever it might be. And anyhow, so we work with them. So from the study, you know, we were looking at ways how we could work with youth, how we could help youth in Nunavut using our language, Inuktitut, and using Inuit knowledge and still using Inuit culture within these games. Because a lot of the youth also, unfortunately, don't know about shamanism or colonization or whatever it might be, or how our ancestors lived in a snow house using a kulak for light and heat, those kind of things. So all those little things are somehow incorporated into these games. So in the kagik, you have a kulak, and where you have to tend the light for heat and light. So all these little things are incorporated in there and in these seven quests.
Can you give me an example of, you know, how you gave input as a cultural advisor that, you know, sort of changed the game?
Actually, it was in a retreat outside of the Iqaluit. And I go, which is very simple for me because I do it summertime nearly daily here. I go up on walks and then I make tea using heather. So I'm picking heather, I'm collecting the water from the river, I'm maybe picking berries along the way too. So these everyday kind of things for me was new to some of them. And I'm like, oh, okay, you've never experienced this. So that really brought me back as to even a simple act of making tea, heather tea in open fire, no one, they didn't experience that. So to me, that was quite an opener, how drastic life has changed. And I was born in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Why is it important, do you think, to learn about, you know, Inuit culture, those little things like making tea, picking berries, how to light a kuluk? Why is it important for youth, and why do you think it helps them with their mental health?
To know where you come from. In Inuit world, we have a tungavik. It's a base. Let's say this is my base. It's where I stand. It's where I go when I need to make decisions or think about something. It's always something. So I always say, you need a tungavik. If you've lost that tungavik, your base, find it back. It's these little things that really help one person to get back on if you're dealing with things that you wish you didn't, but that's the way life is. Because the Inuit culture was based on survival. in a very harsh environment and you're trying to survive in any way that you can. We have to really get back to our base, and the well-being of one person matters to everyone in the community. The elders always advise us to, when we're kind of lost, we go to an elder or an older person, and they say to us, "Una inna inuga sulauto." This person tried to live, so you must try to live as they have. They must always kind of have that in the background, how much of our ancestors strive to survive so that we'd be here, part of society. It's important. They matter. You matter.
Thank you for sharing that, Madeline. Mm-hmm. And as we see the game, you know, set to be complete in March, it's going to be out in the world. What do you hope for the game? What do you think the impacts in your heart will be?
I hope that youth play it, Inuit youth play it in particular, who want to know more, also more about the culture, because you're also listening to our language and the wise wisdoms of the elders, and you're trying to finish off each quest. Whatever quest, whatever life you're dealing with, let's say it's bullying, there's a game for that. Let's say you're just ending a relationship and you're not sure how, you know, all these emotions, whatever you're going through are right or whatever it might be. There's a game on that too. And there's many games on that. So this game will really help, I hope, youth in particular to overcome whatever they are going through and bring joy, because it really brings pride and honor to be part of Inuit culture, I think.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much, too. I really appreciate the time that you took.
Madeline Chamoituk is Inuk from Pangnirtung Nunavut. She is a cultural advisor for a new game called Virtual Kagik. You're listening to Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Rosanna Deerchild, with my high tops on.
Here are five ways to incorporate Earth Gym workouts into your outdoor workouts this summer. Earth Gym is an outdoor activity that teaches you to move with the land. As you can see in the video, I am utilizing the elements around me like rocks and logs.
Bulgarian split squats and deadlifts. These are a few of the exercises Kendra Jesse incorporates into her Earth Gym workouts. But instead of kettlebells or barbells, Kendra uses rocks and logs. Add that to other workouts like her Seven Generations Fitness Circuit, and you're on your way to uplifting your body, mind, spirit, and culture. Kendra is a social media content creator, a hockey coach, and an Indigenous wellness advocate. Kendra, welcome to Unreserved.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell me a little bit more about the Seven Generations Fitness Circuit. How does it work?
So this was a circuit that for myself, growing up as an athlete and being involved in the gym and with fitness, it's always been an important part of my life. And as I started to reconnect to my culture and learn more about our teachings and our way of life, I learned about the Seven Generations teaching. And so for me, I wanted to incorporate that into fitness and movement and make it more mindful and more meaningful and more intentional for people. So the way the circuit will kind of work is there'll be seven rounds, and each round is dedicated to a different generation. So it incorporates the Seven Generations teaching. So it'll start with like your great grandparents, your grandparents, your parents, and then you do a round for yourself, and then it'll go to your children or your future children, and then grandchildren and great grandchildren or future children, or just any kind of children that you have in life. Like, I think a lot of us have siblings, or we have cousins or nieces or nephews, or we just have, some of us work with children in schools or in education or whatever it may be. So I think it's just making your workouts and making movement more mindful, more intentional, instead of just focus so much on physical and the way you look and wanting to lose weight or feeling like you have to do it. It's like, why are you doing it? Like, giving yourself a reason to
to push yourself or to work out and stuff like that, I think for me is something that's been important.
Mm, interesting. So you're doing sort of like crunches for Kukum.
Yeah, basically.
Push-ups for grandpa.
Yes, definitely. Just because that too, it's like even a lot of our great-grandparents aren't here anymore. So it's like you can honor them through moving your body and doing a workout or dedicating exercises to them.
Ah, interesting. And what prompted this idea?
I think for myself, it's just learning more about Indigenous culture. And for me specifically, like with Cree teachings and everything, there's so much that is intertwined in there that is like rooted in wellness. And I really have started to learn that as Indigenous people, like wellness was a way of life for us. And when I looked into our modern kind of wellness and fitness industries, I really didn't see a lot of Indigenous representation. Or there's also a lot of negative stereotypes about Indigenous people within health and wellness. And there's a lot of like things like diabetes or alcoholism or addictions and stuff that affect our people and cause stereotypes. And so for me, it was wanting to just share those teachings and share more about our way of life and our beliefs and incorporating that into the wellness industry. Because I think, but again, like with Indigenous people, like wellness was like a traditional way of life for our ancestors and for our people, the way they lived prior to colonization and residential schools. Like wellness wasn't something that they had to make time for, or they had to dedicate a certain time in their day to go practice wellness. It was like intertwined within their way of life and like just the way they lived. So for me, it was just wanting to create that representation of Indigenous people within wellness and sharing like just the knowledge that we have, because it can benefit not only just Indigenous people, but I think like everyone.
Mm-hmm. And when did you have this idea? Were you working out one day, or are you just sort of, did you dream it? Like, did your ancestors come and say, you know, you need to be more mindful about your working out?
Well, I think for myself, like, again, like I said, I grew up as an athlete, like always being in sports or in the gym and with fitness and everything. So, but yeah, I think for just learning more about our teachings and just a lot of other Indigenous wellness advocates across like North America, like they really inspire me, and they inspire me to create more of that representation or just share more of my workouts or the things that I'm doing in the gym or out on the land, like with Earth Gym and everything. So I think it's just really been about wanting to create that representation and bringing Indigenous knowledge into the wellness and fitness spaces and industries.
Yeah. Why did you want to do that? What made you want to bring, you know, Indigenous culture and teachings into the fitness world?
I think just learning how, like, because when I grew up, like, I heard so many, like, negative stereotypes about Indigenous people. And as I started to be more involved in culture and community and ceremony and learning just how beautiful, like, our way of life really is and how our teachings can really help the wellness and the fitness industry and the health industries, like, grow further. Because what I've seen a lot of is that, like, the health and the wellness industry, it's really focused on, like, the physical and wanting to look a certain way or losing weight and things like that. And I think with Indigenous teachings and culture, like, it's really holistic. Like, it's focused on your mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. And one thing that I started to learn, like, is with my movement practices and why I do it is that, for me, it's now become more important for like my mental and my emotional health than it is for my physical health. Because for myself, as a lot of other Indigenous people, like we carry a lot of like pain and trauma and hurt from like residential schools and colonization. And so for myself, movement has been a way to regulate my negative emotions and deal with them in a good way instead of projecting them on others or turning to like harmful substances or practices. It's been movement and sports has been a really like healing modality for me to just be able to kind of move through the pain or the trauma that I'm carrying, or just dealing with negative emotions in a healthier and in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Indigenous culture, of course, we talk a lot about balance and being mindful and this idea, this holistic approach to health. You know, and in the fitness world, the mainstream fitness world, we're often told you have to eliminate things, right? You have to take away drinking alcohol, for example, or taking sugar out of your diet or this or that, elimination, right, in order to be healthier. But what might we add in, culturally speaking, that would help us achieve that balance?
So I think that too, like, it's really about the balance and it's about like the long run, things that you can do for life and thinking about it for life and not just like in the next month or the next 6 months or the next year or two. Like, it's something that is for life. And so for myself, like, I try to follow just balance practices with like fitness and movement and like even eating and like having like good eating habits instead of just being like, oh, I can't have sugar or I can't have carbs or I can't have fry bread or whatever it may be. It's like thinking of things in moderation. Like, you know, having one piece of fry bread or one Pepsi isn't gonna harm you, just like say having one good meal isn't gonna make you. So I think of it like it's really about the long run and thinking about it for life.
I gotta say, you know, life would be very sad without fry bread every once in a while.
Right?
Never eliminating it. And did you say Pepsi? Did I hear you say
Pepsi? Yeah, I did say Pepsi.
That is so cute. I love that you said Pepsi. Like, yeah. Tell me you're Indigenous without telling me.
Yeah.
How do you use your platform as an influencer to promote Indigenous wellness?
So I think for myself, it's always been about leading by example, because I have young siblings. Like, I'm 30 years old and I have a brother who's 18. I have a sister who's 13. And so I think for myself, it really just started within my family and wanting to be a good role model for my siblings and wanting to lead by example for them and not just preach at them and tell them what they should or they shouldn't do. I wanted them to see the way that I'm living my life and to be inspired by that, and just also wanting to make my parents proud. So it's always just been starting within like my family and wanting to lead by example, make my family proud. And then that's just kind of transferred into like social media and being able to share the things that I'm passionate about, or to, again, just like lead by example for the future generations.
Mm. Recently, you started posting about your experience living with type 2 diabetes. Tell me about that journey. Why did you want to share it?
Yeah, so I think for myself, it was something that's important because I can admit that like I was pretty uneducated on diabetes and like even just the symptoms, or just the, you know, how it is more so. Like with type 2, I found out that it's more so about like genetics than it is about lifestyle, because I always thought, oh, like I'm in the gym and I eat like healthy most of the time. Like, you know, I can never get diabetes type of thing. And so what I've learned is that it's more so about like your kind of genetics or your family history with it, because both of my parents have it. And so I found out like recently that like there's like was a 70% chance of me also getting it, kind of not based so much on like my lifestyle or my lifestyle choices. It was more so like within my genetics and like my family history. And so a lot of people are like, we're really shocked. And like, I was shocked also, but I think it's just wanting to just educate others to even just get their levels checked so that they know what they're at. And because I didn't even catch it when it was in the pre-diabetic stage, it was at diabetic levels already. And so just wanting to educate others, and that like knowing that it's like something that it's, you know, not anyone is above it, or not anyone, like anyone can kind of get it type of thing. Or especially within Indigenous like communities, like we know that the diabetes rates are significantly higher than other communities. So for myself too, it was just wanting to just to educate and to share. And always just for me, I try to be vulnerable and I try to share.
When you were diagnosed with type 2, what were you, how did you react? Were you embarrassed? Were you feeling shame, anger?
Yeah, definitely. Like, there was a bit of an embarrassment and shame. And I think there's just a lot of, I think, shame that comes with it, or like the way that it's kind of portrayed on social media and in the media in general. And so for me, it's just really been just educating myself a lot more about it. And I think in our modern like world, like, think there's so much that is like against our odds with our health. And so that too, just like recognizing that it's like there's so many things that are kind of out of my control that may have impacted this and how it goes. But it's like, for me, it's just all about managing it and doing what I can to manage it. And I think it's been a good reality check for myself. Like, it's just really made me start prioritizing like my food and eating really balanced meals and making sure that I'm staying consistent in the gym, even if it's like, you know, a 20, 30
40-minute workout in the day, or if I'm even, you know, if I don't get to go to the gym, it's like I can, you know, pull out my mat and I can do like some sort of workout from YouTube in my living room, and just making sure that I'm consistently like trying to move my body and not making excuses and being stronger than my excuses with like movement and food, because, you know, again, like it's a journey. Like you're not always going to feel motivated or disciplined to go to the gym or to cook healthy food at home. And it's easy to just be like, oh no, I'll go tomorrow, or I don't feel like going, or I'm tired, I had a long day, or, you know, I'm just going to order food in, or I'm going to go get takeout.
Yeah. Be stronger than your excuses. Please tell me that's on a t-shirt somewhere.
Yes, I should make a t-shirt with that,
yes,
because it's something,
girl,
that's really just been like in my head the last like several months now since I found out. It's just like, be stronger than your excuses.
Mm-hmm. And so how did having, you know, these cultural teachings as your base, as your grounding spot, as you know, the place where you go, help you process and then navigate living with diabetes?
Well, I think too, like as Indigenous people and in our communities, like the impacts and effects of residential schools and colonization has kind of, it really has contributed to like what we have now with like Indigenous communities having significantly higher rates of diabetes than other communities. It's like a lot of our traditional way of life was kind of taken, or it was impacted, and a lot of our traditional like ways of eating and our traditional food systems and everything has been impacted. And so a lot of our people and a lot of our communities have access, and they're eating things that, like, you know, our ancestors never really ate, and just things that our bodies aren't used to. So I think that's really like a big impact of it also, is that it's like just the things that we traditionally like ate, we kind of don't have access to that anymore. Like even especially like people in the prairies, like, or people from the prairies, like not having like the free kind of access like of the buffalo or a bison like we would have traditionally back in the day, things like that. Like it's just like a lot of our traditional kind of ways of eating have been changed and have been impacted. And so I think our bodies like are still adjusting to just the modern kind of foods and the modern things that we're consuming and eating these days.
You know, lots of Indigenous people listening to us right now, sup my homies, who might want to start their own, you know, health journey, wellness journey, you know, coming from an Indigenous perspective. How should they start? Where to start?
So I think it's really just taking a moment to just reflect and think about you and think about the things that you enjoy eating or the things that you enjoy cooking, or even what you're able to, what you have time to do, what you're able to do with that. And even with movement, like it's really a journey, and there's so many different ways to move your body and to be active. Like it doesn't necessarily have to be in the gym and strength training. Like it can be sports, or it can be running, it can be walking, or
powwow,
yoga. Yeah. You can get access to so many different types of workouts or things on there, that it's really all about you, and it's about what makes you feel good, what you like doing, and something that you can consistently do.
Mm. So in other words, put that Pepsi down.
Yeah.
And do some Pilates.
Yeah.
You can put that on a t-shirt too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would sell well. Thank you so much for your time today, Kendra.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure speaking to you.
My producer is like trying not to bust out laughing right now.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get a t-shirt for her.
Yeah, big auntie laugh.
Yeah. Put that Pepsi down and do some Pilates.
Thank you so much, Kendra.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Kendra Jesse is a content creator, honky coach, and Indigenous wellness advocate from Sucker Creek First Nation in Alberta. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous. This episode was produced by Kim Kasher, Rhiannon Johnson, Elena Hudgens-Lyle, Amanda Gear, and Angelina Pelchier. I'm your favorite cousin, Rosanna Deerchild, coming at you from Winnipeg in Treaty 1 territory. Ginanaskamit Nawal. Agusay.